So I'll run up there.
Okay, we're going to call this Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Affairs, our very last meeting of the interim, to order, and we'll start by taking roll call.
Chairman Heller?
Here.
Representative Gulisberg? Senator Unruh?
Here.
Senator Cook? Citizen members Anderson?
Here.
Chris West?
Here.
Vicki Kubat?
Here.
John Martinson?
Here.
Okay, help me. Scott?
Oradnick.
Thank you. Mike Schwartz?
Here.
Larry Severson?
Here.
And Brandy Pellin?
Here.
We have a quorum, Chairman.
Okay, thank you. And then next we'll consider the minutes of our July 9th meeting. Okay, is there a second on that? All right, and then in the paperwork that was handed out to you, just to clarify a couple things, there was a bill draft put in there that Ron Gukasberg, Representative Gukasberg, had presented one of our first meetings, and since then he has decided if he is going to introduce this next session, he will do it on his own and not through this committee. So you can pull that, it's in your paperwork in front of you. It ends in 1,000. So we're not going to be talking about that. That was just kind of an oversight. They put that in the pile and it wasn't necessary to be in there. And Mr. Walstead has run up to council and we are going to be adding another one to review to our pile that was inadvertently left out. So, but we will continue. We'll start with Mr. Augie Turnus from the State Auditor's Office. He's going to relay to us the audit process of political subdivisions. Good morning.
Good morning. Chairperson Heller and members of the committee, last Friday we met some of the committee members here and went over the audit requirements of the listing of political subdivisions. I think you all have a copy. Do they have a copy of that sheet?
Yep.
Okay. And that's what... We won't go through it specifically as far as itemizing it, just a couple points on that. You see under the audit requirement, they are coded. The S means that they do have a separate audit, that we do receive an audit report in our office. If it's coded with the N, they're not required to have an audit. A lot of times they do not handle any money, so they do not have an audit. And then the S code, or the C code, is that it is a component unit of the city or county, so they are part of the city or county audit report. So the various committees and entities that way. Just a couple of notes regarding that schedule. The first page is pretty good. If you look at the second page, just before halfway down, the multi social service districts. Right now, it has an auto requirement as an S. I believe it should be a C. And that's because it is a component unit. And who would have that audit is whoever the fiscal agent or fiscal county for that multi-social service district. So that's probably just is included within that county audit. The other one about halfway down is the Northwest Area Water Supply Project. It has a question mark. Been following up on that. I believe that's kind of handled through the State Water Commission because they're the project manager for that. So that's why they're not required under our audit section to have a separate audit, or we don't receive an audit report for that. The other question that we had is, a little further down, the Regional Education Associations. They're not required to have an audit as far as under our audit section 541014. I did contact a couple of them. They do have a separate audit. We just don't get an audit report in our office. So I can't say if all eight regions have an audit, but the two that I talked to thought everyone did have an audit report. We just do not get a copy of it, so don't have any information on that. So that's not included in our audit section there.
Okay.
And just one last note is under our audit section, there is one, the Regional Planning Council. Now, these are nonprofit, but they are under our audit section, so we do receive an audit report for that. And they're not listed on the schedule, those regional funds, but they are nonprofit, and we do get a copy of those audit reports as required by law. With that, I'll entertain any questions or comments you may have without going through all the individual entities.
And what, just real quick, that last statement you made with the regional planning, why weren't they included on this? I just kind of missed that.
I'm not sure why they're not included. They're a nonprofit.
Okay.
And it's under section 54-40.1, and maybe for whatever reason they did, were omitted on this.
Oh, okay. Are there a lot of?
They do have an audit. There's eight regional councils.
Oh, there's eight of them? Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you want to include those or get those on the schedule or not, but they are under our audit section and we just omitted.
Was that the only one you noticed?
Right. Everything else is included.
Okay. Okay, looking this form over, does anyone have any questions on it or comments? Senator Cook?
Madam Chairman, Augie, would you say that there is a common criteria or litmus test that has to be met to determine whether you have a separate audit versus a component of the political subdivision you answer to, or is it just what happened that he put in place at the time it was created?
No, during the course of the audit, we do review all the entities that could be associated with the audited entity to see if they do qualify as a component unit. There are some steps, so sometimes they're discreetly presented, and that's an accounting term. So they are presented separate in a separate column. Other times they're blending. So there are some criteria that need to be met. And one is the authority that the governing board may have over some of these, like the Water Resource District is a common one. They do have authority, and plus the component unit does not have levy authority without having it approved by the reporting entity.
Well, Madam Chair and Nagy, I would think that these audits cost a lot of money.
Yes.
And I just look at all of the separate audits that are out there, and I would question what's the rationale that makes them separate rather than a component. If they have no levy authority, they answer to a county or a city commission, I would assume. I would think that that audit would be included in the county or city. Maybe I'm just struggling for the rationale as to why they're not. Public recreation. It said special education unit. fire districts.
Same with water districts, they can encompass a lot more area than a multi-county or multi-city, and that's part of the criteria also.
Well, we have multi-county social service districts, and they are a component of the fiscal agent that...
Right, that's the one that I said should be a component unit, the multi-county, because it's who's ever paying the bills or payroll and stuff like that, and that's a service provided to all compared to...
No, I'm fine.
Okay. Kate?
I just have a question about like airport authorities and job development authorities, because they're both listed here that the audit requirements are that they're a component unit, and I happen to know that in the case of Jamestown, they both conduct their own separate audits for airport authority and for job development authority, and so I just, maybe it's different if you're a joint. I didn't see that there was a joint city-county job development authority listed on this sheet, so maybe that's why, but is there a reason that maybe we're doing it that way? We just like spending money on audits, maybe, I don't know, but...
What the regional airport authorities, they're required to have a separate audit. They're not a component unit. Now, even if you're a component unit, you may still have an audit, and that, we see that quite frequently, especially, I use water resource districts. There's a lot of water resource districts. They'll have their own separate audit, but then that gets incorporated in with the county audit report. But they certainly have the options, these boards are different. They can still have an audit even though they're a component unit of another entity. It's up to the governing board if they would want to have a just their records. And we do see that airport authorities, like I said, regional airport authorities cover the whole region, they have a separate one. But if it's just an airport authority, they're within the city or the slash county.
Did you have something, Senator Unruh?
Excuse me, Madam Chair and Augie. So if a political subdivision, and I do hesitate to use that term, but if a political subdivision can be, can do their audit as part of a component of a larger political subdivision, and they choose to take that route, is that audit just as detailed as it would have been if they had done their own audit, or are there different thresholds and requirements that have to be met?
It's probably not as detailed because it's incorporated with the, let's say, a county or the city audit. So you're only testing so many transactions. So it would just be incorporated within the total population of some sample. And then depending upon the size or the financial transactions they have, if it's immaterial to the entity as a whole, they're not testing it as detailed as you would if it was a separate audit.
Thank
you. Mm-hmm. All right, anyone else have a comment or question?
Just one other question. I used to serve painfully on the Legislative Audit and Fiscal Review Committee, and there was a regular set of questions that were asked for every audit. You're familiar with those questions. Yes. Are those same questions asked of all of these audits?
Yes, we do have audit programs. It's not the same as if it was with a state agency, but cities, they have their set of an audit program compared to a county or a school district because it's tailored to that entity.
So the answers to these questions, the findings of the audit, they are easily accessible by somebody who would be interested in it?
Right, I mean, without, as far as the specific, now keep in mind, this is for audits done by the state auditor's office. They also have the option of having an independent auditing.
Well, don't they ask the same questions?
They would ask similar questions, but I can't say they're going to do all the audit steps that we may do. I mean, but they do all have an audit program. It's one of the auditing standards. So.
That's all I was ever concerned about when I looked at an audit. I'd go right to that, those common questions that were the same for every audit, and I'd look at the findings that were there, and if everything was clean, no flags were raised. I didn't give a whole lot of worry about the audit.
The political subdivision, they don't have that in the audit report as far as specific questions like they would for state agencies. These are more financial audits, but there is a schedule of findings and question costs that is included within the audit if there are any findings. But it's not specific questions like you would get the state agency audit for political subdivision. But they do meet, and that's one thing we do ensure. Why we do get a copy of the audit reports, if we do review them to make sure they're in compliance with the government auditing standards. That's it.
Okay, thank you, Augie. And I think this information has been really good to get it all on one form. And if anybody ever wants to introduce legislation to help, I don't know, clean it up or put it in a little bit more uniform manner, that would be, this is really a good form to have on hand. So thank you for coming down and presenting to us. Did you have another question?
I just had, maybe it's a question for you, but are we going to talk about this chart again, maybe at the 1055 item, or do you want some comments on the chart? I just had a couple concerns of things maybe.
That's fine. You can make them.
Okay. The levy authority column is a little deceiving, I think, and because, for example, what like was mentioned, it says like the County Water Resource Board has levying authority. Well, actually, they don't have levying authority. The county has levying authority for them. They're not their own. So they have a levy assigned in this section of the Century Code, which says how much they can, that they can levy this much for them, but they don't have the authority to do it all on their own. So I was just wondering if we need to refine this column a little bit, because I think it's a little deceiving to think that all these political subdivisions have levying authority when really they don't. Most of them fall underneath this, either a city or a county, as a requirement.
Mm-hmm. Samantha, when you
unless I'm looking at that wrong, and I don't understand, but my interpretation was that we board, Water Resource Board for the county, all of them, their authority is under the county commission that would have to approve that levy and certify it for them.
John or Samantha, do you have a comment on that?
Madam Chairman and Mayor Anderson, the column was put together to identify the entities for which there's a specific statutory provision saying you can have 3 mills or whatever it is. But as you pointed out, the majority of the X's on here go through the city or county for the final blessing. And we probably could have tried to divide those out. But most of them are going to run through the county because that's where the tax collecting mechanism is, and except for those within the city, but still those taxes go to the county for collection. So it's kind of hard to explain in that much room.
If I may follow that, I think one of the things that there is some concern about out there is that perhaps you have, say, unelected boards with the authority to levy taxes or something like that. And this column makes it look like that suspicion is true, and I think that's what I'm a little concerned about being out there. And perhaps that's part of that interim study that maybe we'll talk about is, you know, do you have any X's in this levy authority column that don't have to go through an elected body in order for there to be?
Yeah, we really need X's. To go.
So that's the part that I was concerned about. Maybe it's a whole separate column because that's the thing I think we had some concerns about.
I hear you. Senator Cook?
Well, Madam Chair, I think the mayor raises a very good point, and if you recall, this committee and the tax committee, we both passed out legislation that deals specifically with this column.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been careful when I explain that, that legislation, that I don't necessarily say it's levy authority that, that they have, but I say it's legislative authority to, that there's a perception that they have. I think code is pretty clear today that they don't have it. It does have to go through the board. But you can recall even the testimony we had at the bill, there were some of these that had levy authority. They're unelected, and they believe they do have it, and that they don't want to go through the mm-hmm. through the city. So this is an issue. Hopefully, when this session is over, that bill will get signed by the governor, and this column will be very clearly, I think, defined at that point. And she will be right. A lot of these will not show up. And then I also should point out that the governor's task force bill will eliminate a lot of these
mm-hmm.
and combine them. So this is a work in progress, and but these are the issues.
Right.
And again, why this forum, I think, is it would have been nice to have this forum when Mr. Walsted first had to draft that bill.
Well, that would have been helpful.
Yeah.
But, excuse me, Madam Chairman, there's another problem even in that bill. As you recall, when we looked at some of the statutory provisions, it says whatever board shall certify their levy and the county shall levy, which makes it sound like the board sets its own mill rate, although I don't think it's treated that way. Counties and cities assume it's their final call on those, but some of the boards and commissions think it's their final call, which makes it hard to figure out under that column which one are they in. They think they're over here, but everyone else thinks they're over there. So after this session, this column will write itself, really. It'll be a lot easier to distinguish.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming those bills are successful.
Madam Chair, if I can just make one other comment, where I would hope ultimately someday we end up is where, and I'm going to start with the property tax statement. We all get our property tax statement, and it shows the various mill levies that are levied within the political subdivision that mm-hmm. we live. Mm-hmm. I would hope that that statement has all of the taxes that are levied by elected boards
mm-hmm.
and no more. And that any tax levy that is included in that tax that comes for a wee board or an airport or authority, whatever, is ultimately included in the county or the city, and they are ultimately responsible. That's where the levy authority has to exist, so that if somebody doesn't like the tax, they can talk to an elected person about getting that tax corrected.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we should end up with, and we're not there. I don't even know if we know for I think counties can be pretty selective as far as what taxing entities they put on their tax statement.
Yeah. Might just confirm a little bit about that. One of the things I was frustrated with in Jamestown was that they did not list the city park district separately. They listed the city of Jamestown as a city and the city park district all underneath city. And so often everybody would look at their percentage of taxes and they would say this percentage of tax, the city was the biggest percentage of taxes, when I have no authority over the levy that's for the park district for the city of Jamestown, and they have their own elected officials and everything. And so trying to separate that out for the citizens based on that property tax statement not showing that accurately put a lot of calls, say, into my office that didn't even belong there.
Good point.
Madam Chair, that ought to be corrected this session.
All right.
I never heard that before. I that's.
Are you? Did you have a comment? Okay. All right. So thank you again, Augie, for that presentation and answering our questions. And the next we're going to hear from, we're going to look at the Uniform Charts of Accounts and Current Users of the State Budget website.
We are, Madam Chair. Then actually we're going to do the website. We're going to leave that up to Terry, but just quick to inform the committee, at the last meeting you had asked for other states that have a current uniform chart of accounting system, and so we reached out to NCSL And they ran a search for us in Arizona, Florida, Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Utah, and Washington. All have some type of uniform chart of accounting. And they're very detailed and descriptive and extensive.
Okay. So there are states out there that do it, so it's obviously doable. It would just be a matter of, well, implementing like the same software programs, getting training to the counties, and I think that would be a really good job for Senator Unruh to start. Good project. All right, so we'll move on then. Was that all you had to add on that? All right. For a presentation by Terry Trainer on the creation of the Uniform Chart of Accounts. So we'll see what's happening with that and what the counties think about it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Meeting members, Terry Trainer with the Association of Counties. Appreciate being asked to respond to several questions. What I'd like to do first is go to the OMB website. If you recall, last session there was a provision passed by the legislature to basically direct OMB to provide a space on their website for local government to submit their budgetary information. So there's one central location that was available. It was not a mandate, it was a optional thing for local government. I've got on the screen here the OMB Fiscal Management Division website. You probably all recognize the picture on there.
Who is that?
Which, by the way, the director of the Fiscal Management Division was responsible for giving me, at least partially responsible for giving me my first real job after college. So any mistakes are her fault, and she gets the credit. But as you see on there, there's a new section that you can see it, but there's it's labeled new, excuse me, new local government transparency, and that will take you to a index where the political subdivision budgets are broken down into three categories: county budget, city budgets, and other. Everybody was given the opportunity there. I will just make note that only county budgets are underlined, and the other links do not work. Let you include what you can from that. But there are 30 budgets on the county budget listing, and they are quite varied. I wanted to just take you to a couple of them. One of them, Botno, is one of the briefest. As we talked before, everyone has different accounting systems, and they do things somewhat differently. This is the Botno budget that's posted there. Basically, you see all the major funds that they deal with. They break it down by department there. They have a general fund where they have all the different departments. They have social services, road and bridge, and then they break it down primarily by the appointed boards and the budgets for each of those appointed boards, totaling up all appropriations. And then water resource districts, they're involved in various water resource districts. You can see their budgets there, and then the grand total, and then of that grand total, what will be levied as property tax. Fairly simple, two pages. I will go back and I will grab Griggs County as an example of probably a more extensive, and I'm sure all counties have this level of detail. It's just whether they chose to post it. But this is the summary is on the first page here, which is very similar to the Botno County, and most of them have that. But then they go into very detailed year comparison by each fund. They're looking at DES reimbursements, federal grants, all the different account codes, really. They have broken it down into very, very detailed, I forget what it is, something like 48 pages long. And that's what they posted on the website. Another approach, and really the approach that we've encouraged, if it's possible, is more like Burley County, which the link on the OMB website just takes them to you to the Burley County webpage, which is really helpful for them because now they don't have to submit things to OMB anymore in order for it to happen. That link takes them to their webpage, and as you can see, at least since 2011, and probably more in Burley County cases, they've been posting their budget to this page, and they maintain the current budget and past budget. And in their case, it's very similar to the Griggs County budget that they post as well. Hard time here, but you can see all the different appropriations for the different boards, and they break it down very detailed into computer services, office supplies, by each. This is the county recorder here that I have on the screen, the salaries there, what the actual amount, what the adopted budget was, and then break down all the different areas. So it depends upon what is available and what the various counties would like to do. If I could, Madam Chair, what I'd like to do now is also demonstrate Cass County. They recently, in fact, about a month ago, have created what's called the Cass County Financial Data Portal. This is a service that they pay for, and frankly, it's incredible in the amount of information. I don't know how to get out of the tilt screen here. But you, as a user or a taxpayer, yeah, could pick out if you want to show expenses or revenues, the expense type by fund, by department. By department, I thought was kind of interesting. You can see the expenses over time. They have the last 4 years of current expenses by department, and then they go out into the future. In their budgeting process, they actually go out 2 years. And as you can see, all the data is there. You can actually download the spreadsheet and get the information as well. This is a service, as I said, they just adopted about a month ago, and they spent $7,000 a year for the privilege of using this software on their website. They could go drill down even deeper if they chose to, but that would be an additional fee, increasing their annual fee to $9,500 to go down to the detail level. But basically, you could get to every transaction level, which would be similar to what's available for state agencies on the OMB website. Something that, I mean, obviously would be wonderful for every county to have that, like every department in state government has. The Cass County Auditor, however, I put his quote in there that he sent to me. He said, when I asked him if it was difficult, how much, besides the $7,000, what does it take? And he said, it was not great as far as staff time. We download from our financial system the data, do a little formatting and clean up and upload it to the system. We have for a number of years had some off-the-shelf inquiry tools for our financial system that make it easier for us. I've also had three very talented accountants that can do all this stuff. Most companies would not have that advantage. And that's really the difference, I think, when we're talking about this. They have a very robust accounting system to begin with. They with tools in order to extract that data, and then they have the individuals available to do that sort of thing. There was also a question that was asked of us about the traffic to the OMB website to look for local government budgets. We did reach out to OMB, the gentleman that was involved in putting this together, and he said although there was a discussion of tracking the hits to that site and people that went to that, they have not yet been able to implement that, so they really don't know. I reported in the past, we did get some of the counties like Cass that have software, have their budgets on the website and ask them to do hit counting, and it was very, very low, usually in single and double digits. So not a lot of traffic, at least at this time there. OMB may be different, but if they went to the OMB site and they, like Burley and Pass, and I think about 9 or 10 others that have websites, it would also show up on their hit counts if they went that route. And it just doesn't seem like there's an awful lot there. I don't know if there's any questions on the website before I move on to
Senator Cook.
One thing I didn't see on any of these websites is ending fund balances. Can you speak to that? In typical county has probably,
I didn't even turn my mic on. So.
Probably has numerous ending or agencies or divisions that have an ending
fund. I Mr. Chairman, I did ask that of Mike Montplaisir, the Cass County auditor, and he said that's an interesting question, and he thought that that was a valuable piece of information that they don't have on their website. And some of the printed budgets, I've seen that in there, but he thought that that would be well worth it to move in that direction and add that as well. But yeah, some of the printed budgets have that information.
When I think of, Madam Chair, if I can, when I think of, you know, it's one thing to have this information and it's valuable information, but who's going to use it and can they use it efficiently? And I think the typical person that would want to go out there and look to see what's happening, and maybe it's a reporter, maybe it's just a taxpayer citizen, some of the information I think that they would like to see, one of them is ending fund balances. And the other thing, you can look at numbers and you can compare city for, or Cass County, let's say, what it pays for a sheriff versus Bottineau County, what it pays to have a sheriff's department. What I'd like to see is, what does that equate out to per citizen?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the type of numbers that, so that then when you go out there and look, you can take a look and say, how come a sheriff's office is so expensive in Cass County? A good question, and it's probably got a legitimate answer. But if somehow, I think to really make this effective and beneficial to those who are looking at it, if you could get some information out there that's down in that detail.
That would be interesting to see, like, compare city to city or whatever, division to division, as far as costs per
capita,
citizen.
Yeah. Fire department, sheriffs, health district.
Actually, in talking to those private auditors, they said the one of the states anyway that has a uniform chart of accounts easily can, you know, put blanket that information across the state, and then they can see county by county how much it costs per citizen to live in that county.
Well, Madam Chair, I would argue that we have one political subdivision that's as close to that as I think we can get, and that's schools. We have the financial fact book, we have counting standard uniform accounts, and we can get it broken down into cost per student to educate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Terry, were you going to move on then and let us know what the counties think about this? Because
right. What
are the counties that aren't reporting, they're just not going to report, or they're working on it, or they just don't want to, or what's the status?
Madam Chair, as far as, you know, placing their budget on mm-hmm. on the website, I wish I could give you a real clear answer. I think as time has progressed, at least in my view since I started in this job, the responsibilities in the fiscal staff and counties have become immense, and especially when you look in the West. They're just overwhelmed with everything. We've collapsed in an effort to economize. A third of our county auditors are also now county treasurers, and some of those are also the county tax directors. We've really collapsed to economize. These people have so many duties. It's just one more duty. It wasn't mandated. I don't think it's a reluctance to show the information. Counties, unlike cities and other jurisdictions, have a requirement. They have to publish that entire budget in the paper, which they do. Other jurisdictions do not. Every jurisdiction has to publish a notice that there will be a budget hearing, but counties actually publish their entire budget. So I think their feeling is this is just doing it one more time. I feel a little guilty in some ways. I really encourage counties to put them up there. You notice counties are the only ones that did. The require, or not requirement, but the suggestion was cities and park districts and townships and everybody else, nobody else did. And so we did a good job, and now we're the focus. It's kind of a little frustrating, but if that's the direction we want to go, we will continue to encourage them to do that. And as we have with the larger counties, we'll really encourage them to get links there. So it's not something that we have to do every year. Once it's there, it's there. And that's the direction that we would hope to go.
Yeah, I found it interesting that was it Barnes County that just provided the link to their own website?
That was Burley, but
oh, Burley.
Also Cass, Grand Forks, Ward, Stutzman, most of the larger counties all did that because it's just easier for them.
Right.
Yeah. And they have a very robust website.
Mm-hmm.
Most, I shouldn't say most, but a large number of counties do not because of cost primarily and the staffing it takes to keep a website up.
Okay, and then as far as what do the counties think about moving to a uniform chart of accounts?
All right, Madam Chair, if I can continue then, I think I can get to that. But I first want to talk a little bit about the data that is out there already. And I've given you an awful lot. In 1985, our offices began compiling the county audits. If you remember at the last meeting before when the state auditor made a presentation, he brought the county audits from all the counties. It was about a 2-foot-high stack of paper. Since 1985, we've been contracting for an analysis of all those audits. And I don't imagine a lot of the legislature is aware of it, but we've been using that information in testimony for quite some time. The 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, those pages, 8, are really 1 year of that data, 2010. You can see on page 3, this is the general fund of every county, broken down by audit categories, their revenue, taxes, license permits, intergovernmental, charges for services, fines and forfeits and miscellaneous revenue. That is their revenue for 2010 in the general fund. Page 4 is the special funds, and page 5 then is the total of those two. That information is extracted from all of those county audits. And then if you go on to 6, 7, and 8, it's the same format. However, it's the expenditure data. You can see the expenditures in the general fund, public safety, highways and public improvement, obviously general fund, nothing there for highways, big numbers in special funds because most of that comes from special funds, very similar to the state budget. Health and welfare, culture and recreation, you can see it all there. That information is there. It is compiled. You will see maybe this will be a little more something that you remember, but this is something that we've given to multiple interim and regular standing committees. The line charts that we've been keeping track of, both the expenditures and revenues, but I've just brought the expenditures here, looking at what the various cost categories on a statewide basis. Of course, we've done this at different times for different purposes. We've looked at the big four, the big 10 counties, reservation counties versus other counties, looked at it in different ways depending upon the interests of the legislative committee. But you can see how they have grown over time, as well as if you look at them adjusted for inflation. 10 and 11, those pages are just looking at those specific categories of health and welfare, how those budgets have changed in real dollars as well as inflation-adjusted dollars. I think the health and welfare is real telling. You can see when the financing of social services was restructured in what was called the SWAP in 97, big drop in overall spending, and again with the child support enforcement restructuring in 07, we see a big drop there. Not as big, but a big drop relative to overall. And you can see, obviously, on page 11, the change, the rapid increase in the last few years, even inflation-adjusted increase in highway funding, largely due to the legislature's willingness and to put state dollars into local government roads. But that information is there. Another example is on pages 12 and 13 of a requirement that the counties have for road funding. This is something that was put in place in 2009, where counties, cities, and townships prepare and submit to the state tax department a special expenditure report regarding road funding. We request an annual download of that. We keep compiling that, again, to use primarily for reports back to the legislature, as I would suspect that's why it was put in place. And as you can see, how things have changed, and again, here, this is just road funding, but you can see the dramatic increase in construction spending because of the legislative appropriations for that purpose. These are just examples. There is another requirement also that counties submit specific expenditure data, again, I believe, to the tax department for oil and gas gross production tax revenue spending. My point in sharing this is to illustrate two things. First, it's possible to some degree to provide uniform county information with current data systems. There are, however, drawbacks on that. One, the audit reports that we compile are old. The most recent we have in our office right now is 2010. We have contracted to get 11 and 12 done, because those audits are largely completed. But because of the fact that we have to wait for the counties to close their books and then the auditors to get done and submit the audits, that takes time. We're always several years behind. We'll have up through 2012, hopefully, when we go into the legislative session. But that information is available, and it's consistent on a statewide basis, and there's a lot of history to it. And that is one concern that counties have with moving to a new chart of accounts. They all have history. They have much greater detail in their history for their own local county because they have used the same account codes for county recorder computer expenditures for the last 20 years. They know what those are, and when the county commission sits down at the board table, they can look at that and say, well, this has been going up every year. Oh, why is Vicki spending so much money on computers? Or it's going down, or whatever. And there is a concern that if we move to a whole new set, it's going to be very difficult, at least for the first few years, to get that sort of history. That's one concern. They, of course, are concerned about the cost in programming and staff time. The state financial facts for schools was brought up. Excellent system. I've used that myself. But again, they all use the same software, as I understand, largely supported by the state. Makes it a lot easier. This will be expensive if we try to move the six or seven different software companies all into the same place. And long term, their concern is that it doesn't solve the variation problem unless there's a mechanism for consistency. Someone needs to review that everyone's using it correctly and then have a strong training and technical assistance requirement. There are constantly new things that come up, a new funding stream from the state or the feds or a new cost center that may, and it has to be someone's call that, how are we going to use that? Is everybody going to put it here or here? There has to be a mechanism to make sure, otherwise we drift away from the consistency. My understanding is, from talking with some of our more seasoned county auditors, there was a uniform chart of accounts in North Dakota for a number of years, and everyone used it, and most everyone is still using it to some degree. But because there was no state agency, no accounting body or whatever to maintain it, as these things came along, people had to plug them in, and as county sizes have sort of spread. We have Cass County with funds for water control that Delwest no one ever worries about. So there's a lot of different things in different counties that would need to be addressed. I think the feeling is that the timing may be right if we're talking about major change with what the governor's task force on property tax reform is proposing. That may eliminate a lot of history for counties anyway if we collapse the property tax funds as being proposed and basically eliminate dozens of them. We may be losing our history anyway, so the timing may be right. But the concern, I think, overall is if we just move on to that, have we accomplished anything? What is the goal? The goal is if there's a particular set of data that counties would or should be providing to legislative bodies, to their citizens or stuff, if we could identify that, they could program extractions to pull that out and put it there. Their struggle is that there's always new changes that they want, and that obviously a unified chart of accounts would make it easier, but it's the cost of constantly reprogramming how the data is pulled out that makes them fearful of where we're going with this. If 90% of what everybody wanted could be identified, we could pull it out now. We could get the six different vendors to program that and pull that out and give it to whoever wants it. But it seems that it changes, and that's the challenge that counties have, is how do we know what's going to be wanted in the future, and even if we come up with a new chart of accounts, will it address the requests that everyone wants? So they're not opposed, they're very cautious, they're concerned about the cost, it's something that certainly, as people have pointed out before, it's doable. But there are concerns. I don't know if that answers the question very well, but I will try to stand for any additional questions the committee may have.
Thank you. I think you brought out some really good points on that. They most definitely make sense as far as, you know, losing your history, the cost, well, everything you just said. And I'm sure Senator Cook has a comment on this since it's been his passion, but
they have a right to be fearful. I hate to admit it, but all you have to do is look at the history. I mean, look at all the reports that you are required to give because somebody thought it was an important report 20 years ago. It's still in code and nobody reads the report. And we got to clean that all up as we go through this process. But I think the key of this is, as we move forward, that we do it, and we do it in conjunction with a lot of communication with the folks in the county who are on the front line, that we listen to what their concerns are.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most important thing Terry mentioned is we being the legislature, need to understand or define what our goals is, what it is we're trying to reach. And I'm not too sure we could answer that, and I'm not too sure we could find consensus on that today. But I think it's going to be a process, and it's a journey that I think we need to walk down. And it's not going to happen overnight, though.
All right, anyone else have a comment on this report that was given? No? Well, I thank you, Terry. It was very good and thorough, and I like to hear the county's perspective on our little goings-on here as to what we are requiring you to dig up for us. And that was very interesting to get their input, so.
Well, and from a personal standpoint, if it was easier for me to respond, because sometimes it's very difficult to come up with what a legislative committee wants, what are counties spending on health districts, or it's a challenge. And frankly, I can only go to the auditor so many times and ask them for the information, because they have other things to do. So if there was a uniform way, I could just reach out and grab all their data, that'd be wonderful. I'm doing that right now for the legislative session on tax. I'm getting downloads of all their assessed values. But that's a chore. Mm-hmm. And it'd be nice if I could control it all, but I don't think anybody wants me to control it all. Thank you.
All right, thank you. So we'll move on. Go ahead.
I think we should all be thankful and very appreciative of all the work that the Association of Counties has done.
Exactly, yeah. That's not a small undertaking.
Certainly thankful.
Yep. All right, so we'll move on to Ms. Linda Ledbetter with the State Supervisor of Assessments and the Tax Department. And we are going to get an update on the efforts to establish a uniform property tax statement among the counties.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the Commission. For the record, I am not Linda Ledbetter. I'm Joe Morissette with the Tax Department. Pinch hitting for Linda today. She had kind of a family crisis, and so she is out of town today dealing with a sick family member. But what I've distributed to you today is something that you've seen before, and something that I know Senator Cook has seen before because it's been presented to the Taxation Committee several times. Century Code provides that the real estate tax assessment used in every county has to be prescribed and approved by the Tax Commissioner. The Interim Taxation Committee directed that we should undertake an effort to make those statements more uniform. In that process, Linda put together a working group that consisted of county representatives, and they reviewed their own statement, their own capabilities based on their software vendor and that type of thing, and came up with a statement format that, although it's not exactly uniform in every county, it is consistent in the data that's contained in there and fairly consistent in its location. There's differences based on the formatting and what the software vendors can provide, and differences in the particular format that a county might be used to, whether or not the coupon that is returned with the payment is at the bottom or the top, that type of thing. But other than that, it's a very consistent format. Each statement contains 3 years of comparative data in tax amounts and mill rates and property valuations. At the top of those columns, right below legal description, is a summary of the legislative tax relief that's been provided over those last 3 years. Below that is the summary of the taxable valuation for the property for those 3 years. And then below that is the mill levy, the mill rate. The next section of the report is the actual dollar amount of taxes levied by taxing district. And I think that gets to your question that was brought up in the last meeting. What is contained in that section and what taxing entities are shown, as it was brought up in your discussion previously. There's differences in how that is shown. In some cases, the city total may include park district levies. The very top statement is from Stutzman County, and so that's likely the case there. If you leaf through this and go like to the second page, you can see that there's a difference in the Grand Forks statement, where the county and the city, and in the second line, the city township tax amounts are combined, but there's a breakdown there where the park district is shown separately. In the case of Grand Forks, after the school district levy, there's the statewide levy and the Garrison Diversion levy are combined, and the Soil Conservation District is shown below that. So there is, I think it's a good example of how there's room on the statement to provide the detail. There's also, you can see a blank at the bottom there below Soil Conservation District, where there'd be room for an additional taxing district to show their levy. It really depends on the choice of the county, what they choose to itemize, and I'm sure somewhat on their software vendor in the foreground and how they're used to doing it in the past. The very back page for Foster County shows another example of significant detail there. Again, the city township levy is combined. There's a separate district, a separate levy shown for the fire protection district and the water resource district.
So how is Linda's group doing on this? Have they finished their...
Madam Chairman, they have. The county's requested that this be finalized for them, for their programmers, by the end of July, and that was done. And so work has been either underway or completed, I would think, in most counties in preparing this format for use in the next property tax statement.
So all counties are on board with this new format?
That's true, right. All counties are going to use that I don't want to say standardized, that uniform mm-hmm. statement, you know, with differences based on their own programming and their own software, but that unified statement will be used by all counties.
Okay, and so did they leave that up to the software capabilities of the counties as far as how much breakdown there is? Or who decides that, like how to break, if they're going to break out the parks and...
Yeah, Madam Chairman, that was really not, to my understanding, that was not really an item that was part of the discussion. It was more or less the overall format, the three-column format of comparative data, the location of the legislative tax relief, the overall structure, but it was still a local decision on what political subdivisions were shown and how that was shown.
Okay.
So there will continue to be some differences there.
But the basic format now has been discussed with all the counties, and they're all pretty much on board with the basic layout?
Madam Chairman, that's correct. They're mm-hmm. very supportive of that of that effort.
Senator Cook?
When Linda made this presentation to the tax committee, the question was asked of her, is there any legislation needed to get to this end result? And her answer was no. I think we got to put that question on the table again, particularly if we would want to make sure that every taxing district that had elected boards ended up with their taxes that they are responsible for on the statement.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe right now Stutzman County can make the choice of combining the city parks with the city of Mandan or city of Jamestown. I think we need to have a discussion whether they should have that flexibility. I know it was not part of the discussion that Linda and the groups worked with. Maybe Terry can answer it. I also see here in McHenry County, they combined the county and the state one mill. I always like the state one mill broken out just because you see exactly what a mill is worth. But these are the discussions I think we have to have. And then if it can be done, if we can reach the goal without legislation, and if we can't, do we want legislation, and is it a goal that the legislature does ultimately combine to want?
Mm-hmm. Did you have a comment, Ms. Anderson? Oh, I thought you had your hand up.
Nope. I think Senator Cook addressed what I was pointing out earlier in the meeting, and then also just about the Garrison Diversion District was the other one that doesn't appear on, for example, Stutzman County statement yet. There's no authority that the city or the county has whether to levy that mill for Garrison Diversion or not. And so I'm not sure where it actually appears on here. I know that we do it, but it's unclear where it comes
it's
from.
In your county.
So what you're saying, Senator Cook, is that as far as the political subs that levy, you want them listed as part of the uniformity of all the forms?
Well, I think that's the direction we need mm-hmm. to move towards. I don't know if I'm the only one that thinks that, or if that's, to me it makes sense.
Right.
I don't know if we can do that, and I'd like to hear maybe what Terry has to say, but mm-hmm. do we need legislation to reach that goal? Is there a reason why we shouldn't require it? I'd like to hear what the counties have to say about it.
Madam Chair, committee members, Terry Trainer, Association of Counties. I think the language of the statute is fairly broad, giving the tax department the authority to establish the format. If that's the format, I would be pretty confident that the counties would do whatever they could to make sure that that was broken out like that. I want to point out, you will always see city township on online because you can't be in a city and a township. So it's either or, it isn't that they're combined, but I can definitely see where you'd want to break out the city and the city park. And I think most counties combine the 1 mil from the state levy with the county just because it's so consistent, and it's in some cases, it's a very small dollar amount, 1 mil on outlot of a ag land might be a dollar and a half, and to break that out seems to them a waste of space. But I would suspect that should the counties working with the tax department come up with a format like that, I'm sure they would all use it.
Would we be able to have that format in place by tax statements that come out in December of 2015?
Madam Chair and Senator Cook, I doubt it. The timing to get this done was done so they could program it. It's largely programmed, I would believe. The bigger counties maybe could make that change, but I would suspect the smaller counties, their software is pretty well frozen by now.
That's 2015.
Yeah.
Okay. Madam Chair, maybe there's no committees that are going to need any more to continue to see that we reach that goal, but maybe Terry can reach out to Stutzman County, for example, find out why they do combine the city and the park, if they have any problems in separating it. And
Madam Chair, Senator Cook, I'd be glad to. I would think the mayor might be able to get something done quicker than I would, but I will reach out to all the county auditors and see, you know, if there is any flexibility, and say that's the desire, at least of some legislators, to move in that direction and see what can happen.
And all your work so far has been with the tax department. I would think that could just continue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Joel?
Thank you.
Yep, go ahead, John.
I just have a question. Terry and Joe are probably the best people around to answer. There was some discussion with the county auditors and with the tax department about creating a user manual, like a one-page explanation that would accompany these statements, that would explain to citizens who are interested how you apply the mill rate against your property value, how that determines what your tax is, and what these figures on here mean, and what the school levy reduction is about, and so on. I'm not sure where that's at. I think Linda was working on that and talking to some of the auditors.
Madam Chair, Terry Traynor again. That discussion did go on, and the information has been communicated. We're sort of in the same situation. After the format was sort of frozen, we said, okay, this is it, give it to your programmers. The consensus was that this stuff we need to put on the back. We're already in some counties increasing their printing and postage tremendously by going to a single parcel. The idea of putting another sheet in and essentially doubling the postage and printing cost again was not very well received. So we're talking about how do we print that on the back as we're printing the tax statement or doing pre-printed forms. So the discussion is there, the desire is there, but like I said, we froze the programming and said, go ahead and start doing it. I don't know if how many are going to be able to get it done or how consistent. There is a lot of information the counties already put on the back. I mean, the breakdown of the penalties and interest, and if you make payments over time or if you're delinquent, and all that sort of information ends up going on the back already. So it's a matter of incorporating the explanatory information with that. It was a discussion, and we're hoping to move ahead, but again, I don't see there's going to be consistency in that this go-around. It would have to be 2015.
Well, I guess that was my concern, that because it's kind of late in the game for this year, that it just doesn't drop out of consideration. That.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you for that report from the assessments. That was interesting, and thank you for sharing these examples with us that the counties are using now. At least it's a start, and we're moving in the right direction. All right, so we're going to go into the 1045 item and hear from the Council of the Interim Study Resolution relating to reports from political subdivisions.
Madam Chairman and Commission members, before you in the pile this morning, up in the left corner, 15.3024.01, it is a study resolution draft. Now, just as background, the ACIR has statutory authority to undertake studies it deems appropriate that relate to political subdivision issues. But this would be a resolution that would be considered during the legislative session, and it directs legislative management to study this issue. Legislative management, if this were approved, could assign this study to any of its interim committees or to the ACIR. So just to make clear, it wouldn't necessarily come back to this group. But the study resolution addresses some of the topics that have been discussed this morning. The whereas clauses just kind of lay out some background of why this study is important. The first one is, as was mentioned, political subdivisions are required to prepare and submit a whole bunch of reports on all kinds of different topics, obviously involving quite a lot of staff time. The idea for the legislature in establishing those requirements is to provide some transparency, to inform the public, serve as a basis for state policy decisions. But I think I don't know if there's specific knowledge, but there's a substantial suspicion that a lot of the reports that are prepared are not being utilized to much of an extent, or at least to the extent that was contemplated. And I've spent some time looking at through some of those reports, and I know some of you have as well. It's very hard to compare them because every county puts the information together in a little different format. So when you start looking at 53 reports and trying to follow a line item through all of them, it disappears here and there, and then it comes back again, and it's always hard to tell where they're at, so the uniform accounting system may be significant to this kind of study. But what it calls for is an interim study on the financial reports, whether they're being used, and whether they should be improved, consolidated, or eliminated.
All right. So that's what's before us now, and we have to have discussion and vote on it, whether to move it forward?
Well, if it were to move forward, it would require the committees recommendation by a roll call vote. The committee isn't required to do anything with it if that's the will of the majority or...
All right, let's have discussion on this. And so, actually, I think it would be a good thing to study just for the reasons John just said, that the reports, I mean, are people reading them? Are they necessary? Are they duplicative? Could they be improved, consolidated with something else? I mean, it just sounds like we're being bombarded with reports, and are they necessary? So this would study what's all being turned in and deem necessary or not. Anybody have a comment on that? Ms. Anderson?
I have a question actually for Mr. Walstead, if that's okay. So if we pass this, the legislative management would be able to assign it to any interim committee. Could they also assign it to a task force, or does it have to go to an interim committee?
Madam Chairman, Mary Anderson, it would have to go to one of the legislative management's interim committees. The management has no authority to assign it to some outside of the legislative structure entity.
Okay.
I suppose they could hire a consultant or something, but even then, that would have to be within an interim committee's study assignments.
And the reason I ask is because it seems a little bit similar to maybe some of the tasks that the governor's task force was looking at for, like, combining mill levies to find the efficiencies there and things like that. And really, you need representation from, you know, cities and counties and all the group. It makes sense for it to be at this committee, but it also makes sense for that to be like a small working group of some sort. So, like, I'm just picturing a task force, but I'm going to be supportive of this regardless. So I just look for an efficient way to do it.
All right. Do you have a comment?
I think it's long overdue. It's a job we have to do, and I'd move it forward.
Okay.
Second.
All right. Is there a motion and a second?
If there is no more discussion, I guess you can direct
anyone
the roll to be called.
I just have one question. It's limited to financial reports. Are we excluding some reports when we say financial reports?
Well, I spent some time, I'm sorry, Madam Chairman Sandcock, I spent some time thinking about that. Initially, I just said reports. Then I started thinking about what all does that bring into the mix? And I thought, maybe we need to talk financial. So it's spending and revenue issues and not like social service program reports or Medicare or who knows.
Somebody else can have that task.
Yeah, exactly. I was looking out for myself, kind of.
Chairman Heller.
Yes.
Representative Gugisberg. Senator Unruh.
Aye.
Senator Cook.
Aye.
Citizen Member Anderson.
Aye.
Kubat.
Aye.
Martinson.
Yes.
Oladnick. Schwartz.
Yes.
West.
Yes.
Severson.
Yes.
And the governor's designee Pella.
Aye.
Chairman Heller, it passed.
Okay, so that one will be considered. Let's move on to the next item, where we're going to look at the study resolution relating to statutory references to political subdivisions.
Madam Chairman, this is in response to one of the memos we had last meeting about the different definitions and references to political subdivisions that are throughout the Century Code. And the process for this resolution is the same as the last one, but this one is a study basically going over all the different numerous definitions and references of the Century Code that refer to political subdivisions that cause confusion, and nobody's quite sure what all of them mean. It is to create, the purpose would be to create a more specific set of definitions and references that's easier to understand, and examine also the statutory authority for each of those political subdivisions, whether some need clarification and understanding the proper roles of those subdivisions.
Okay, so that would be looking at the entire Century Code, wherever political subdivisions are referenced, and provide clarification, or?
Yes.
All right. All right, is there any discussion on this resolution?
I'll make a motion that we adopt the resolution.
Okay. All right. It's been moved and seconded.
Okay. Chairman Heller?
Yes.
Gugusberg? Senator Unruh?
Aye.
Senator Cook? Citizen Member Anderson?
Aye.
Kubas?
Aye.
Martinson?
Yes.
Zarudnik? Schwartz?
Yes.
West?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
And Governor Designee Pelham?
Aye.
Madam Chairman, it passes.
All right. So what John is handing out here now is a bill draft to allow townships to reclaim their zoning authority that they previously have surrendered to the counties.
Which is a great idea. Isn't it weird that Mercer County doesn't have townships? One of only five, right?
Madam Chairman and Commission members, this is a bill draft the Commission has seen before, and it relates to an issue that was raised by township representatives, I think at the first meeting of the interim, relating to a township that has given its zoning authority to the county. Under current law, it's rather difficult to get that zoning authority back. Now, counties were allowed to unilaterally give away zoning authority to the county without a buy or leave or anything at the county level. That didn't have to be by agreement. The township could just say, we don't want to do it, now it's your problem, and that was the end of the deal. A constitutional amendment was adopted in 1982, and we've kind of gone through the history on that. That constitutional measure says now that a political subdivision may by mutual agreement transfer to the county in which it is located any of its powers or functions, etc., etc., and may in like manner revoke the transfer. So now, under the constitutional provision, those kinds of power transfers have to be by mutual agreement. The ceding entity and the receiving entity both have to say, okay, this is an agreeable change of who will handle this. And the Attorney General issued an opinion that says, under current law, the only way for a township that under the old law unilaterally gave away its zoning authority is a joint powers agreement between the county and the township by which the township could exercise the zoning authority. That seems like a convoluted method, so the bill draft was prepared that is in front of you, and it says if a township or city, and cities were affected the same way, that transferred zoning authority to the county may by mutual agreement get that zoning authority back. Now, it was suggested at the last meeting by Mayor Anderson, I think, that the committee should also look at a draft that if the township or city unilaterally gave away its authority, it could unilaterally just take it back. I didn't prepare a bill draft for that. The Constitution, I think, now is pretty clear that there has to be a mutual agreement involved. However, I don't want to suggest there's never been any constitutionally questionable legislation introduced, because I've written a lot of it myself. So if the group chooses that approach, language could be adjusted in this draft, so we could talk about that rather than preparing a separate draft. I thought it's just a question of tweaking a few words that are here.
So instead of saying by mutual agreement, it would say?
Just by notifying the county that we're taking it back.
Because my question is.
We would have more artful terms, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, my question is what if the county won't give it back? Then they just hold it? I mean, because it says it has to be mutual, and what if for some reason they don't want to give it back? Then they.
The county would not be obligated to return the zoning authority. And there's no voter involvement or anything else. So that is a problem. However, that's what was written into the Constitution and approved by the voters back in 84 or whenever that was. So now that's the overriding principle in these exchanges of authority. Pretty hard to change that.
So is this just clarifying what the Constitution already says? I mean, is that why this is necessary? If the Constitution says that, why do we need that?
The Constitution says that, but there's no statutory provision that executes that with regard to zoning that has been surrendered. So it is necessary to have a statutory provision to make that work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then on section two, which, what was repealed there?
That is the old section of law that's been there forever that says a township or a city can just give its zoning authority to the county. It's still on the books. It's clearly not in compliance with the constitutional provision that exists now.
Okay.
So to repeal it, regardless what else happens, would be appropriate because it's definitely obsolete.
Okay. All right. Is there discussion on this? Anybody have a comment about the townships? Do you have? Go ahead, Ms. Anderson.
That was kind of reflects my comments as well. I was hoping that it would not prevent a township that wanted its own zoning authority from, you know, butting heads with a county that maybe didn't want to relinquish it back. But based on Mr. Walstead's opinion on the Constitution, I think this bill draft actually meets the needs as best as we can.
Mm-hmm. Larry, did you have an additional comment?
I move the bill draft.
Okay. Is there a second? Wait.
Chairman Heller.
Yes.
Senator Unruh.
Aye.
Senator Cook.
Aye.
Citizen members Anderson.
Aye.
Kubat.
Yes.
Martinson.
Yes.
Schwartz.
Yes.
West.
Yes.
Severson.
Yes.
And the governor's designee Pellin.
All right, let's move on then to the 1115 item where we're going to review a bill draft that would require voter approval of bond issues and property tax increases to be placed on the primary or general election ballot.
Are you doing that one or me?
Go ahead.
Okay. Madam Chairman, Commission members, the draft before you is a little bit fatter this time. The number up in the left is 15.0075.01. It's a draft the committee or commission has looked at previously, I think at a couple of meetings. And what it does is provide that for elections held by political subdivisions or called by political subdivisions that would put before the voters a question of increasing property taxes, or increasing debt. So it's a bond issue question, and it is a mill levy increase question or something like that. Any of those kinds of issues would have to go on a primary or general election ballot.
All right, and the reason it's so thick is because I'm sure there's different areas in the code that where that is referenced, so you have to put all the sections in there and change it.
This draft pulls in quite a number of sections. I've gone through them individually at previous meetings. We can do so again if you wish. But the idea is everything relating to bonding or increasing property tax levies, when the voters are called on to consider the issue, no special elections would be allowed.
And that includes schools, right?
That includes everybody. Let me make sure. It's been a while since I picked through here, but they are in, yes, 57, 15, 14 is where that is covered, and it is right here on page 16.
All right, let's have some discussion on this. Do you recall, I'm trying to even recall, when we first brought this up, was there a lot of discussion from outside groups on this that chimed in? Does anyone recall what the, I know John has something he would like to add to this discussion, if you want to know.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The School Board Association is opposed to this bill draft, and if it passes and we see it before the legislative session, we'll oppose it there too. We've talked about this before, and you recall that our association thinks this is an infringement on local control. We think it's an overreach on the part of the legislature, should it pass. And as a result of our conversation last time about this, one of the reasons for bringing this draft forward was the concern about low voter turnout in these special elections. So I did a little research, and with your permission, I'd like to distribute this. So I contacted some of the school districts that did have a special election for the bond measure, and those I contacted, I didn't contact all of them, but those that I contacted mentioned in this article, Botno, Garrison, Kenmare, Mott Regent, and Tioga all had special elections, and some passed, some failed. But the point I want to make is the voter turnout was higher for the special election than it was for the recent June primary. For both city commission and school board. And in the case of Bismarck, they also had a bond election, and there were slightly more people that turned out for the bond election vote in the special election than for city commission. So again, I didn't do a statewide research, but I just needed to go on record as opposing the bill draft. Thank you.
Thank you, John. My comment on that comment that you made that the voter turnout was greater in the special, well, I mean, maybe the primary would have been higher if the bond issue would have been combined in the primary. You don't know that. I mean, people that are involved with their taxes being increased or anything to do with budgets, they probably would have turned out to whichever place they could voice their opinion. So since that was a special election, they showed up for that. But had it been combined with the primary or general, they would have showed up for that. What's your comment on that?
Well, Madam Chair, you might very well be right about your hypothetical situation, but my point didn't address that issue. Mm-hmm. My point addressed the issue that was raised in this committee, that there is lower voter turnout for special elections than there were for the June primary.
Mm-hmm.
And my point was, at least in some cases, that was not the case.
Okay. Any other discussion on that, Ms. Anderson?
Well, thank you. Though I think I also echo some of Mr. Martinson's concerns. From the city's perspective, we're really concerned about the timing of projects. I think is probably the biggest concern about this bill draft is if you have to wait 2 years to be able to pass a bond issue for a street improvement project or any type of infrastructure improvement or something that will be a bond issue or will increase your debt, and you may have a levy associated with it even, that can certainly be a detriment to your community, and it can really increase your project cost as well. So there could be a lot of additional cost associated with it. I do think that maybe some of the intent of this bill at some point could have some legs in that we really are trying to encourage good voter turnout in all of our elections. And from the city's perspective, I would always try to incorporate any initiatives or bond issues that I have into the election because that reduces the cost of the election. So from, you know, being a good steward of taxpayer dollars, I think we're going to try and not have special elections and always hold them with a general or primary because that's a cost-effective method for us because elections can be expensive as well. And then we could possibly work on the future at something that would outline some additional guidelines for special elections that may help relieve some of the reasons this bill was drafted. For example, maybe there needs to be a significant more advertising time, maybe polling hours need to be longer, maybe they need to always be held in the same place that you would hold your general primary elections to encourage voter turnout. Maybe some provisions like that might be something that we could look at in the future, but to strictly limit it to primary and general elections is really going to be very difficult for cities, and so I think cities are going to be opposed to this bill draft in that language.
Okay. Senator Cook?
Well, Madam Chair, I would say that this issue is before us because there's a lot of citizens out there that are concerned with the status as it is today, and they're going to they communicate with legislators and voice their concerns. My guess is we're going, from what I've been hearing, we're going to see a bill next session, whether it comes from here or from a legislator. A lot of the concern is that there's lower voter turnout. I think there's concern that, I understand there's a need to have a special election once in a while. I think there's concern, and I think it is being abused. I think there's a lot of times when a primary or general election would have worked just fine, but for some reason they chose a special election. That's speculation only. The other concern I hear a lot about is when the school has a special election, the school is in charge of the election, not the county election officer. And I would argue that the county auditors are the ones who are responsible for all elections, and they should be held responsible for all elections. I have some county auditors that said they don't like that, but you know, that's their job as far as I'm concerned. This bill has a lot of work to be done on it yet. This bill wouldn't go anywhere as it's drafted right now. I think we do have to have, if we're going to go down this route, eliminate, and maybe the mayor is correct, just get some better criteria for when a special election can be held. But I think if we were going to require a primary and general election only, you'd somehow have to have a way of having a primary every year if needed. I think that's the biggest concern. What we do with this bill, it's irrelevant to me. We can leave it sit here. I'd have a hard time voting for it as it is because it does need to have some work done on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be an issue, and it's good that we had this discussion in this commission. It shed a lot of light on it, but I'm afraid it's going to be an issue next session.
All right. I appreciate those comments, and I have to agree also that, you know, what Ms. Anderson and Senator Cook just said, that there has to be some sort of leeway in case a community needs a special election, and this would totally eliminate that and I just don't think that we can operate that way, so I don't know. What do we want to do with it? Does anybody else have a comment? Pardon?
Run to the next agenda item.
Okay. did anyone else have a comment on it? Mr. Schwartz?
Madam Chair, my only comment would be on this, and as sitting on the Bismarck Park Board, mm-hmm. that I would assume something like this would filter down to the Park District, and it would be so difficult. I echo Mayor Anderson's comments on this. So difficult to get projects done mm-hmm. if we had to wait for an election every time we had to issue bonds. So those are my comments. Mm-hmm.
All right, then, let's move on. Let's see, where are we at here now? We're at the Tax Administration Division. The Tax Department is going to talk to us about city sales tax for products and services delivered outside the city, which gets to be interesting, I'm sure.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and Commission members, my name is Miles Fosberg. I'm the director of our Tax Administration Division.
Is it the blue light on?
It is. So maybe I just need, there we go. And Mr. Walstead asked me to discuss a little bit on the issues on local sales taxes. I understand there's maybe some concerns about some transactions being taxed when they shouldn't be. So what I'll cover this morning briefly is just the point of taxation for local taxes, and then talk a little bit about what the tax department does in administration of those taxes to try to get the taxes collected as accurately as we can.
Okay.
So first, starting with the point of taxation or the sourcing of transactions, North Dakota, like most states but not all states, use a destination sourcing on sales within the within the state, and so that means basically where the purchaser takes possession of the goods. So we have a set of rules, a set of hierarchy within the law that says, first, if the purchaser is at the retailer's location and they take possession there, that is the point of taxation. And if the transaction is not completed at the retail location and that those goods are delivered somewhere, that means it could be delivered by the seller, by a common carrier, or the purchaser could even hire some type of a shipping company or a common carrier to have the goods delivered to some point. That delivery point is the point of taxation. Okay? And then it kind of goes beyond, if you don't know where the delivery takes place, which doesn't happen very often, maybe what happened with transactions of, say, software, which could be downloaded online, and so maybe the seller doesn't know where that product is eventually ending up, then they use the records within the seller's address within the seller's records of maybe where that business is located or whatever records they have that kind of distinguish where that customer is, and that would be the point of taxation. And the exception to this, and this deals mostly with sales of tangible personal property, but I think the other question was related to telecommunications service, and so if you have a cell phone service, telecommunications is taxed at the point of primary use, which means if it's an individual, it's their home address, or if it's a business, it's the business address, because as we all know, phones move everywhere and they're used everywhere, and they needed to find a point of taxation. And so there's a uniform sourcing act for all states on telecommunication services. So that point of taxation is the place of use. So next, what the department does to try to assure that these transactions are tracked and taxed properly is North Dakota is a member of the Streamlined Sales Tax Organization, and some of you may be familiar with that, but it's a group of states that works together with business communities and different associations and so on to try to simplify and make sales tax more uniform across the country. One of the things that the Streamline group did was develop databases that can be used by retailers or can be used by individuals, and that database is based on a zip code or an address. can be either one. North Dakota uses zip codes. So we prepare databases of zip codes, and that's a zip plus four, for every location in the state, and then that ties to a database of the taxes. So if you look up the zip code, you're able to tell whether they're within or outside of a local taxing jurisdiction. We post those databases to our website. They can be used by online retailers. They can be used by, you know, anyone that needs access to that information to help them identify the location, whether it's inside or outside of a taxing jurisdiction. We also have on our website a local tax locator, which anyone can go out to the tax department's website and use this local tax locator and put in a zip code. So you put in the 5 plus the 4 digits, and it will return a page that identifies the state and local rates. And I think I had a copy of it. It's just real simple. It shows state rate, and then it shows any applicable local taxes. And so effective October 1st, Burley County will have a tax. And so if you put in a Bismarck address, it's going to show the state tax of 5%. It's going to show the city tax of 1%, and it's going to show the Burley County tax of 0.5% for a total of 6.5%. Anyone can go out and use that locator. If it's not accurate, and you know, we develop these tables with the help of ITD here, and way beyond me how they work, but basically it uses maps and it uses borders, and then it uses GPS to identify all the addresses within the borders and creates these tables to identify a particular location. So if any user goes out and finds there's an error there, they could report that to us, and we have the ability to update that table so it would be correct from that point on. We update these tables about every quarter. Usually the problem that, you know, if there's a problem, it's usually that someone is not being included in a city that's subject to tax because of maybe the city has not yet provided us with boundary changes, or there's new addresses because of all the building and so on, and so they don't show up in the table. But once in a while, those borders on those maps aren't exactly right, and so there may be issues right on those fringe areas. If those are reported to us, we can fix those and take care of them. As part of our streamline agreement, we also agree to, you know, retailer is responsible for collecting the correct amount of tax, and if they don't collect, say, a city tax because they relied on our table, they're relieved the liability for that because they relied on the information that we provided that may have been incorrect. And so that's where we're at. I mean, if there's any particular questions, I would be, you know, glad to answer. I guess one thing I didn't mention is the cell phone companies, one of the pieces of information that they will ask for when you sign up for cell service is your primary address. And that's what they use as the basis of the taxation. If you move and you don't change that address with your phone company, you're going to get billed the wrong amount of tax because they don't know when you move a cell phone to another location. But
and Miles, my question is just, you know, if I was did not know my four digits after my five, how do I find that out?
On our website, where you go to check, we have a link to the Postal Service mm-hmm. address, and so you can hit that button. It'll take you to the Postal Service, and then if you just put in your street and city address, it will pull up the correct okay. address. I should also point out, if someone has a new address and the Postal Service doesn't have it yet, and just for example, if it's in the city of Bismarck, if the Postal Service can't find that or hasn't assigned an address, so all you can use is the 5-digit, our system is going to return the 5% rate, and it's going to use the lowest possible rate mm-hmm. That it's sure of, so that people don't get overcharged.
Okay. Larry, did you have a question?
May I pass something out?
Sure. Did anyone have any questions for Miles? Senator Cook?
Miles. If somebody was collecting the wrong tax and it was higher, they're charging the customer 7% instead of 5, how does that get back to the customer?
Under the sales tax law, and Madam Chairman and Senator Cook, under the sales tax law, we'll refund to the party that paid us the tax. So in that case, the customer would need to go back to the retailer and get a refund, and the retailer would be able to apply to us and get a refund of the overcharge tax. So the consumer should be able to go back and get corrections and refunds.
Madam Chair, the 2% is paid ultimately to a city. Is there a recovery mechanism to take the tax back from the city?
Madam Chair and Senator Cook, yes. I mean, we'll just reverse it back.
Madam Chair, what I handed out was a unscientific study that I did using the state tax department's local tax locator on the website, as Mr. Vosburg pointed out, and I found a whole bunch of errors. They'll show up in the three columns on the right hand as grayed out areas. Those are errors. In some cases, on the first page, it's the wrong county that's being returned. Column H is the actual county of residence, and column W is the one which is reported from the state website. In this case, the first five items, or four up there, Steele County is not getting their 1%. A little farther down, Cass County is getting 0.5% from some Trail County residents. Going to the next page, Hillsborough is getting 2% from residents in those townships that are served out of the Hillsborough Post Office. Now these are, I took our association mailing list and used their addresses and ran them through the locator. And this is what I found. Hillsborough, if your mail comes out of Hillsborough, you're going to be paying the 2%, no matter where you live. Same with Hope. Finley, Hatton, Mayville, and Portland.
So what you're saying, Larry, is like, just for an example, on this last page where you have these people, they actually reside in Steele County, but they're paying the Portland 2%, so Portland's collecting that?
That's correct.
So have you discussed this with the tax department, all these?
All this came about, came up in the last month. I got a bill from a new internet service provider that said that my North Dakota sales tax was 7%. And trying to correct them, they directed me to the locator. And it occurred to me that if this is happening to me, it may happen to others. So I checked all the members of my own board, and they were all being taxed Portland. Then I went on to the association mailing list and found that this error happens a lot in Trail and Steele counties. I did not find it anywhere else in the state. I didn't do a large survey anywhere else. Mm-hmm. I just did a few cities in the state that have local option taxes, and I found they were done correctly. I did Max and Edinburgh, and I have a couple others I don't remember, but they were done correctly there. So it's like one service screwed this up, and we'd like to know who did it.
That was my question to you, Larry. Did you go up to the tax department and sit down with them and just ask them, like, if there's, you know, way to get to the bottom of it?
Madam Chair, sorry. I just called in and talked to somebody in compliance. a month ago, and then I asked John if we could look into it and find out what's going on when I saw just how large they had become.
Okay. And do you have a comment?
Madam Chair, the comment I can make is this is the first time that I've seen this. We will certainly try to correct these errors. One comment on the post office box. If someone uses a post office box for an address and it's in a city that has a tax, mm-hmm. that's the delivery destination, and so it is going to be taxed there.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the point of taxation. So perhaps, I mean, if a street address is used and it's delivered to that street address out of the city limits, it's not going to be taxed. But anytime you use a post office box, that would be taxable within that city, even if the resident lives outside of the city. But the other, you know, the other ones here, I can't explain. I haven't had a time to look at it. But I mean, we will certainly try to correct this information if we're aware of it.
All right.
Madam Chair, is there any mechanism the state could use to survey more of the state to make sure it's not happening in other areas? To be a little more proactive in this, not just assume that it's being done right?
Well, what we could do, Madam Chair and Mr. Severson, you know, we could try to do some more testing. Particularly now, here you're saying there's these two counties that seem to be having issues. We could do more testing across the state, but we could certainly
Can you possibly identify one service that was responsible for messing this up in these two counties? And
we work with ITD, the state agency that information technology department. They have software that utilizes to develop this. And so they start with maps and end up with the zip code table. And we can work with them if we feel we have issues, particularly if we feel we have issues in a certain area, and try to get that corrected. You know, like I said, it starts with maps and borders, and so maybe those borders, I don't know if these areas that you found a high error rate, are they right on borders or not?
Madam Chair and Miles, they are across the county.
Okay. We will certainly do what we can to try to correct those.
And as I surveyed 200-some addresses, these are just a sampling of the population, looking at five or six township offices where there's maybe 200 residents that would be affected the same way. So it is a large issue.
Okay, and we will certainly try to correct it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Miles.
It looks like that, you know, you guys can work together on that and, you know, do a cross-reference across the state and see if it's happening other places, but Larry pointed out.
And, you know, we have gotten, normally where we've had someone that's had an issue, it's been on, you know, near a border. And so they were on the wrong, they were placed on the wrong side of the
mm-hmm. If you look at the second page, mysteriously in the towards the bottom of the Hillsborough listing is one that is done perfectly. I would imagine that is someone that has called in and complained.
Yeah.
And you'll notice that any of the addresses which are PO boxes are not grayed. I think I caught them all and did not color those.
All right. Was that satisfactory to you?
That's satisfactory.
For your next list?
I've got one other question on the application of taxes to subdivisions. What are subdivisions liable for sales tax on? For instance, buying signs or culverts at a township level?
Madam Chairman and Mr. Severson, political subdivisions are generally exempt. So that goes all the way down to the township level. on purchases of tangible personal property. If a contractor is installing, say, township hires a contractor to purchase culverts and install them, that contractor is going to have to pay tax on those materials that are used, but the retail purchases themselves by the township, the counties, the cities, are all exempt from tax.
My situation is, the county ordered some signs billed to the township, and then the county installed the signs. Will those be taxable?
They would not. They should not be taxable. Now, it would be the township's responsibility to provide an exemption certificate, you know, even though it may say certain township. We issue exemption certificates to those organizations to provide to the retailers so that the retailer has something in their records if we audit them to demonstrate that it was sold to the township, but those transactions should not be sold.
We have a certificate and we did advance a copy of it and they returned the billing for the, looking for the tax.
Did you discuss this with the vendor?
We just got it back.
Okay. Yeah. They should not have. I mean, if you declared yourself as a political sub and provided the exemption certificate, they should not have.
Is there a written guide somewhere that we could send them a copy of to clarify?
There is a guideline on our website that I could direct you to that talks about the taxability of sales by government entities. And in fact, I can, you want to give me your email address after the meeting or something, I'd be glad to get that to you.
That'd be great, Miles. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Miles, for your statement on the sales and use tax. All right. So now we're down to the part of the agenda where we just are up to community discussion, which this is our last meeting, but if anybody wants to make a comment or has a question, we can take it now. All right, it looks like everyone's ready to go, and that's the first time I've looked at the clock. It looks like we're right on schedule. So I just want to thank everyone for participating in this committee. I think we've done some good work to drill down into some areas that might need further ado, and we'll move forward with the bills that we just passed or the resolutions and see what happens to them. But I want to thank everyone for participating and for putting your self forward to represent the government that you do represent and are participating on this level. And Senator Cook has a comment.
Don't we need a motion?
Yes, we need a motion.
Would you like it?
Sure.
If I get it wrong, John, you put it in the minutes, right?
I'll fix it.
But I would move that the chairman and legislative council or staff prepare a report to be given to legislative management. And that's it.
And any legislation to implement the recommendation?
Yes.
Just a couple. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Oh, okay. That was
it. Well,
anyway.
All right.
As you know, I have seen it done lately where the motion to adjourn sine die has rolled right into the...
Rolled right in? For the move that we...
Call the roll twice.
I would move that we adjourn sine die.
Second.
Chairman Heller?
Yes.
Senator Underhill?
Aye.
Senator Cook?
Aye.
Citizen Members Anderson?
Aye.
Kubat?
Aye.
Martinson?
Yes.
Schwartz?
Yes.
West?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
And Governor's Designee Pelham?
Okay. I just have a final comment. I'd like to thank the council for helping us immensely with this committee because it takes a lot of research and a lot of prior knowledge of what has happened in this committee. So I really appreciate all your help, John and Samantha, for everything that you've helped us prepare for these meetings. Thank you. All right, that's it. How late did you